The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I have Alan Hoslins back here from American Farm Mortgage and coming on to talk about what's happening in the world of ag banking. So, Alan, how you doing, bud?
Doing well, Casey. How are you?
Doing okay, man. Doing okay. It's a it's springtime. Got planters rolling out in the field. Probably some start a little earlier than they should have, but we'll see what happens with those guys. But I guess as you look around your area, Alan, what's the activity look like out in your neck of the woods?
Well, I would say you summed it up very well. We saw some planting going on a little earlier than we typically do here. We have over the past couple of weeks kind of seen that subside. There's been some moisture come through. We've actually had a couple storms come through, and right now over the last day or so we've had quite a bit of rain, so that ceased that activity. I will say that I've not seen any crops emerging yet, but that doesn't mean that there aren't some.
Right. Yeah, it's a it's always a race so you can be the first one in the field, right? So you can get the first pass planted anyway. So you brought up a pretty good point here, and I've been so busy today I haven't had a chance to really watch much news or listen to much news, but the Fed has been bouncing around the idea here. So I guess let's set the table a little bit. So beginning of 2024, end of 2023, Federal Reserve comes out and says, you know what, there's a possibility that we could lower interest rates by three times going out through 2024, but there's going to have to be a lot of things that show progress to move things forward. And looking at what's out there right now, everything's indicating that we should be able to do that. Never once really did they say we're doing it. It just said, like, we're starting to see the signs point that direction. We're talking to me about there's some Fed chairs out there that are looking at what they have going on around them. They're saying, like, I don't know, man, this inflation thing doesn't seem like it's going down anytime soon. Maybe we need to knock rates up a little bit more. So I guess talk a little bit about what you saw today, Al.
Sure. As we tape this, today's Friday, April 12th. And on what I observed earlier today, there were a couple of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors that were discussing the possibility of inflation creating an environment to where we might need to see some rate hikes instead of rate decreases. And as you were talking about, Casey, you go back 45 to 60 days ago, there was no talk that I was hearing at that time of any rate increases. In fact, as you said, it was more, this is the environment where we're going to see rate decreases, and we feel like inflation is becoming more under control. Obviously, inflation didn't get that memo. It's been a little more stubborn than was perhaps anticipated. And I think, Casey, that's a good reminder. I always find it interesting as, you know, as a banker, I get questions, well, what are rates going to do? And I try to be consistent in my answer in that if I tell you what rates are going to do, please ignore it because I don't have a good crystal ball. And I think regardless of the environment, it always serves folks well to look at how do I manage risk regardless of the rate environment? How do I manage risk if rates are going to move up? How do I manage risk if rates are going to move down? Because just as we've seen, the inflationary reports that are coming out are now at least causing a couple of the board to believe that maybe it needs to move in a different direction. Now, I will also say one of the things that I heard today, I really appreciated hearing in that it is nice that we have members that are willing to not necessarily walk in perfect harmony with the group, that they will voice what they think, and more importantly, will discuss the reason behind that. Because that's the other thing, Casey, that in the news reports that I heard today that I thought they did very well. And the individual that was speaking that talked about the nicety, if you will, of everyone not being in lockstep, it was done in a respectful manner to where the people weren't being disparaged because they had a differing opinion. So I was kind of heartened, quite frankly, to hear that, because in today's world, you don't always see that. Sometimes people having a dissenting opinion tend to be viewed down upon. And I thought that was a positive sign that they were being respected despite the fact that their opinion was differing than what had been said earlier.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're right. You see, this is one of those things you don't want to take lightly, because you take this, you know, history's taught us that you take your foot off the gas in the 70s and see what happened in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they thought they had it under control, and they bounce mm-hmm. back in and see things run up. I think every one of these Fed board of chair guys or board of governors, I'm sorry, are looking mm-hmm. at this going like, we just don't want to see that happen again. We want to make sure mm-hmm. that we can control what we can control now, nip it in the bud, and then move it forward. But I guess, Alan, as you're looking at the economy as a whole, I mean, even with interest rates where they're at, the cost of money the way it is, and the price of the inflation that we've seen, and how much more things cost now comparatively to what they were, mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that somewhere along the line, inflation would be, you know, kind of coming down. It's come down quite a bit from what it was, but mm-hmm. it's still just kind of being stubborn at that 3.4, 3.5, 3.3 range. I guess mm-hmm. looking at that, Alan, what do you think there, and how are you working with your customers about where this could go now? I mean, if you start looking at throwing another quarter or half or 75 basis points or something like that onto interest rate now, I mean, mm-hmm. What are you going to do to prepare customers for that?
Well, one of the things, obviously, as we sit here in mid-April, this is the heart of the revolving line of credit renewal season. And we get another 30 days under our belt, assuming that there's no rate movements on the operating loan side, with most people locking in rates on those for a year. And when I say most people, at least most of the folks that I know, whether they're current customers or whether they're customers of other institutions, I'm hearing the vast majority are fixing those rates for a year. So there is some protection from the upside, Casey, by what's being done right now. Relative to what we're going to be looking at in the future, one of the great tools that I think that's available to everyone is to very easily look at what their either variable rate debt is or what the amount of debt they have that's going to be repricing, say, in the next 12 months, and looking at rate shocking that. What happens if that debt is repriced at today's level rate plus 200 basis points, 100 basis points, or today's level minus 100 basis points? What does that do to the operation? And I think that's a great tool that can be utilized, because if someone has a loan that is maturing, say, 90 days, 180 days from now, what about having that discussion that let's look at possibly going ahead and renewing that loan today, repricing that loan today, if they're uncomfortable with where they think rates might be in the next 90, 120, or 180 days. And once they have that information, Casey, again, I think a good lender always understands that they're an advisor, not a director. Those are two completely different things. And letting the customer have information that helps them make a decision that they can sleep at night with.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make there. I mean, you got to kind of lead, you got to lead the path and let people make decisions as to what they're going to do as you look down at what's going on. So let's talk a little bit about where things are at right now when you start looking at some crop prices. I mean, there's a lot of things that are pointing towards there should be an increase in crop prices. There should be some things moving in a generally different direction than what we're seeing now. We just can't seem to get, for all the bad news that's coming out of Brazil and everywhere else, you just can't seem to get anything to move. You know, as you're looking at the guys you're working with and look at the profitability and the stuff that are there, how do you go about that saying, like, okay, what if type scenarios when you're working through where things are at, you know, because, you know, you and I have talked about this a million times where there's always one time during the year historically that shows that you can make the trade and make the thing to make the profitability that you need on the farm with the crop that you're working with. So I guess talk a little bit about that, how you're looking at that kind of stuff.
Sure. I think the ideal solution, at least in my mind, Casey, to that is that's where the farmer fills his role as the CEO of the organization and understands that the advisors that he's working with, being the banker, the grain merchandiser, et cetera, can provide him information. I think a really good solution to what you just talked about is probably a joint meeting, because I hope no farmer ever takes my advice for merchandising, because candidly, that's not what I do on a daily basis. And there's people infinitely more qualified than I to be able to talk about some of the tools that a producer may employ to help them lock in some profit opportunities and minimize downside risk. I think there's a great way for that, the three legs of that stool, the lender, the merchandiser, and the farmer, to sit down. Let's run some numbers. Let's look at break-evens. Let's look at what type of marketing tools are available. What's the cost? More importantly, what's the cost of doing nothing? And I would say, Casey, that lets that producer get good quality information from both parties. It minimizes the risk of miscommunication between the producer and the advisors that he has. So that would be the ideal solution that I would have in that regard, because if the merchandiser that the producer's working with understands how the lender's looking at it, and conversely, if the lender understands how the merchandiser's looking at it, it can be very valuable, because if that merchandiser anticipates that cash flow isn't going to be substantially increased until April of 25 for the 2024 crop year, that lets the lender make sure that there's adequate liquidity that's going to be available to that producer, assuming that the year that's projected is what's occurred. It lets that lender understand what kind of liquidity needs that producer may have in the form of perhaps a supplemental line, because the crop revenue is not going to be received as early as it might normally be. So that's the way that I would approach that, and I think it works out better for the producer in the long run.
All right, so this is something I've been thinking about here for a while, just trying to get in my head a little bit. So I know succession planning is always a big issue on the farm. It's always one of those things that's just, for whatever reason, it's just a hard conversation to have, and it seems like just doesn't get done, right? So as you're looking at the next generation coming in, and as you're looking at, you're having to talk to the customer, the next generation is coming in, and then, my son or daughter's coming back in to do these things, and they're going to take over from me sometime. As a lender, when you're having that conversation, how do you breach that? What's your succession plan look like? I mean, how do you go about that conversation without, break it out and show me what it looks like?
Mm-hmm. I would tell you that the way that I personally would typically approach it is just trying to understand what the timeline is that the producer believes that they want to continue to be a part of the operation, both from a managerial perspective as well as a labor perspective. And once I understand what that timeline looks like, one of the questions that I ask be considered is, what is your plan in the event that there is a disability or something that is going to inhibit that plan from being finalized and implemented? And listening to them and seeing what the response to that question sounds like, I'm also interested to make sure that conversation, as much as humanly possible, occurs with all parties present. And when I say all parties, that would be spouses, both of parents and children. Because let's be realistic, changes of that magnitude within an operation are going to affect everyone. They're going to affect them from a business perspective. They're also going to affect them from a personal perspective. And Casey, the succession planning question, quite honestly, I think can be a more difficult question to answer than the estate planning question. I think at times, at least from personal observation, it can be a less uncomfortable conversation to talk about how ownership is going to change at the death of a parent than it can to talk about how operational perspectives are going to change through the life of the parents, or for that matter, of the lives of the children, because it also works in the inverse. I won't always direct that question to the parents. Sometimes I'll direct that question to the folks that aren't the senior people within the operation. So if you would decide to pursue other interests or something happened that you couldn't be a part of this any longer, how do you think that would affect the operation ongoing? And I can tell you, I've never seen that question be answered the first time it was asked where, at least from my perspective, it looked like everyone was comfortable with the answer.
That's a good point, Alan. I guess until I started to tell what you just said right here, I wouldn't have thought about, son or daughter comes back and realizes 5 years into it, the farm is not what they really wanted to do. Well, now what happens? So that's a good point. So lastly, Alan, as you take a look out here, give me your thoughts and figures here. As you look out from where we're at right now, 2024, the way it sets, moving into throughout the planting season into the growing season, we got some drought areas. We got those kind of things. A lot of things can change with rain and what have you. But I guess looking out there, talk a little bit about what your crystal ball is telling you and kind of what you think 2024 might turn out to be.
Well, if you look at our area specifically and you look at where prices are today, corn is a very challenging commodity to see a lot of profit potential in presently. Now, that doesn't mean that every operation is going to lose money on corn, because every operation is different. But if you look in our area, corn and soybeans are obviously the primary two commodities. There seems to be a little better profit opportunity right now in soybeans than corn. Not materially, but a little bit. So I would tell you that as I'm looking forward into 24, going into 25, that I think absent something materially changing, both in the commodity side as well as on the drought side, at least in our area, it could be a pretty challenging year. Now, one of the things, Casey, that I'll also say, and I actually saw this as we came into 24, I really would urge producers that as they work with lenders or their accountants to make sure that they're looking at their numbers on an accrual adjusted basis, not just a cash basis. And Casey, here's why I say that. I saw an operation that if you looked at it on a cash basis only, and then you looked at where they were on an accrual basis, their true profitability was about 100% different than what the cash basis said.
Just a little bit, not too much, right?
Just a little bit. In years, this is important in any year, please understand, but particularly in years of tight margins. Understanding what that true profitability is, not necessarily the tax returns, because as a lender, what I learned, I believe, a lot of years ago from some people a whole lot smarter than I, Casey, I won't say that tax returns lie, but tax returns don't tell the whole story. And I would really tell producers, as they're sitting down with their lender today, and when they sit down with their lender mid-year to see how they're doing, and as they go into next year, if they're not already asking this question, ask the lender, so what does my profitability projection look like on an accrual adjusted basis? If they haven't heard this already, what did I look like at the end of 23 on an accrual adjusted basis? I hope that's not a surprise question to any lender, and I don't think to the vast majority it is. And I think there's some pretty intelligent people out there in the lending community, regardless of whether it's commercial institutions, farm credits. There's some people out there trying to do the right things and helping the producers. But Casey, that would be the number one thing that I would kind of urge people as they move forward through this year. And please look at your financials more than just this time of year. Look at where you're going to be mid-year based upon your updated planning intentions, because very few people end up planning exactly what they thought they would at the beginning of the year. Weather can change that. There's a number of things, markets. But I would ask that they make sure that they're looking at those numbers ideally, no less than quarterly, to make sure that they don't end up with a surprise as they get into the end of the 24 crop year and as we go into 25.
All right, Alan, it's probably a good place to stop. If folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing over at American Farm Mortgage, what's the best way to do that?
Sure, they can reach out to me by email at ahoskins@americanfarmmortgage.com, or Casey, my cell phone number is 618-926-0463, and I always welcome calls from folks and love to hear thoughts and ideas, and appreciate folks reaching out.
Right on, Alan. I appreciate you being on the podcast, man. We'll catch you again next month.
Thanks, Casey. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Get a LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the video version of the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel, and then go to the new website, which is movingironllc.com. Everything Moving Iron related is up there, so check that out. The Moving Iron Summit is coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee, November 4th through the 6th. So if you want more information about that, please send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com, or all the registration information is up there as we speak. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Alan Hoskins. Let's go some iron, folks.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers, and close more deals? reach your ideal customer, then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.